This is A Different Brilliant, an Aspect podcast focusing on the strengths, interests, and aspirations of the autistic community. Open, authentic, and engaging conversations about autism. Made for autistic people, parents, and carers of children on the autism spectrum. Welcome to A Different Brilliant.
Hello, and welcome to A Different Brilliant Aspects podcast. My name is Madeline Jane Lobsey. I'm the host of the podcast, and today I'm joined by Dr. James Best. He is a general practitioner, but has a very deep passion for young people and particularly autism. And recently, general practitioners or GPs that work in rural areas, and does a lot of work with them. He's also the author of a book, Sam's Best Shot, and I do love that title. And it's about a 6-month backpacking trip with his autistic son, Sam, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Through Africa. Welcome to the podcast, James.
Thank you, Madeline.
I want to call you Dr. Best all the time.
James,
I love
please,
it. James, yes. Okay, good. So today we're going to talk about, I think, something that's really important, and I don't know that it's spoken about very much, and that is the experience of being a father of autistic children. And, you know, so today, even though you're a doctor and you have that, you know, life, and that gives you a certain view of life, today we're going to talk about you being a dad. Mm. And having three children, and what it's like, I guess, throughout the whole journey of that experience for you, especially that what we know now is Sam is in his late teens, yes?
No, he's in early 20s.
Early 20s. Yeah. Okay, there you go. Yeah, so that's like a whole life of experience. So, and there'll be people listening that are fathers, and they will be at all sorts of places in the journey, whether it's the very beginning. They may not even know whether their child's autistic or not yet, but they have a suspicion or they think so, all the way through to early diagnosis, through to teens and adulthood. So let's maybe start, I guess, at the beginning of the experience, because, you know, when your child is diagnosed with anything, but when your child is diagnosed autistic, that can be very overwhelming, you know, if you don't know anything about it and a lot of information. So speaking solely as a father, what was that like for you? And do you have any advice for fathers about it?
Well, what it was like for me first. So I was a doctor. I was actually already had a specific interest in children as a GP, and that was my focus. And yet, the amount of information, amount of knowledge I had about autism was actually quite limited. And I think that's probably a reflection of the fact that it was over 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Even doctors, and someone who had an interest in pediatrics, my knowledge of autism was not that good, and that was probably pretty common at the time. I think the way we view autism and our knowledge of autism, both in the general community and in the medical community, has completely changed.
Yeah.
And so my experience at the time was, oh, my God, what's that? And what does that mean? And as a pediatrician sort of dropped that bomb, and I remember that day. I remember that day. Driving to the pediatrician's office when my wife rang me and told me, because she had taken Sam. And I just remember intensely my feelings in that trip, because it was like, what does this mean for Sam? What's going to happen to his life? And all these things that I didn't really know about. And so it was traumatic, actually, and because I didn't really understand what it meant. And I think the message that would be delivered to a father now, or parent now, would be quite different.
Because, I think you know, I talk to thousands of autistic people and families, as you would as well. And I'm not sure, even though things have really moved on, whether someone necessarily will have a different experience than what you've had. Yeah. Because even though, you know, you and I are in circles where it's spoken about a lot, I think there's still an absence of knowledge for many people.
For many people, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you hear that word and you have exactly the response you had.
Yeah. And so it was a bit of a bombshell. And then in the time that followed that, my wife and I both dove into what was known about or in a big way. And I think the more we got into it, the more we realized the what was required and how to think about this and what maybe the future might hold or not. And so I think it was a training or a gathering of knowledge and skills about what we needed to do and what it meant for Sam. And I think, though, over the years, it has changed a lot, including, when Sam and I did our Africa thing and all that sort of stuff. And also getting to know Sam, getting to know the way he thinks. And also because I was, as a GP, I was also dealing with a lot of autistic patients, particularly children and their families. And so I became much more aware of what autism meant and
what it's like in reality, I guess, like people's experiences and day-to-day life and,
At that time, though, autism was viewed in a lot of by a lot of people as some sort of terrible thing, a curse, and the language that was being used in media at the time. This was all the whole time around when there's the whole MMR autism link and all this was talked about as an epidemic, and all these negative sort of a really negative language around autism that I think is not so commonly done now.
No,
there is still some. But I think that we're talking about difference and neurodiversity rather than disorder disability and these negative sort of deficit-based terms.
I think that's really important what you just said because, when you do get a diagnosis, they may still say autism spectrum disorder. Like that
they
may
do. They
that,
do.
That will be what is said.
Level one, two, three.
And you get levels, which – that's a whole other conversation.
Yes.
But so you're going to hear those words, disorder. I mean, I don't know that people hear much else when they hear those three words. And I think it's really important the thing you just said is whilst it might be named that, there's worlds of conversation and knowledge that are expanded from that now.
Yes, yes. So I think when I am talking to other parents, including fathers, about their new child's new diagnosis or label or in all this sort of thing, that I really try and frame it in those terms, because yes, it can be a something that gives you disability. Your son or daughter may be involved with enrolled on the National Disability Insurance Scheme, and there may be things that they cannot do that other kids can do at school in terms of, attention and ability to sit and learn independently and what happens at home, all these sort of things. But there are also strengths to autism as well. And that's something that I've come to learn over the years. So I think acceptance of autism is a really important thing for fathers. And
the journey of that, like I love everything you've said about it. Like it's not an immediate thing.
No.
Like you have the shock, the trauma, then I'm down a rabbit hole of learning.
And sometimes then, learning the wrong thing.
Right. Yes.
So I think that's what happens to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I think with fathers in particular, they're often on the sideline a bit because without trying to sound sexist or anything, it's their father will often be the breadwinner that's working and the mother will be the one who is, if there is a mother and father, of course, we're not all the typical families, the mother may be the one more commonly taking the child to the speech therapist and the occupational therapist and the pediatrician and the GP and all the other things, whatever therapy, early intervention, all that sort of stuff. So the mother's often taking that role, not always but often. And so I think that sometimes dads can be a little bit, I'm just earning the money and trying to help out where I can at home. So those roles sometimes can make fathers think a little bit out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, I tend to, even in our household, I tend to drip feed my husband information, and not like I'm withholding stuff, but I'm just going, okay, I think this is a great article to read, or this is a really good video, or, you know, this is going to make such a difference to your experience after you watch this video or listen to this podcast. A lot of that. But the thing, one of the things I love the most about what you've said so far was getting to know Sam, because every child is a unique human being, as we all are, and there's discovering them, learning them, seeing what they love, the way they view the world, the way they operate in the world.
Yes, and it's not autism's just a little standardized version. There are millions of autisms. Because they're such broad strokes about what we think, what we describe as autism, you know, talking about issues with social skills and communication skills, as well as the strengths as well.
Yeah.
That these things can vary enormously.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is saying that many of you would have heard, if you've seen one child with autism, one person with autism, you've seen one person with autism.
Yeah.
You know, that's all. They're all different. And the way their autism expresses is all different. So when I said before, getting to know Sam, getting to know Sam's autism as well.
Yeah.
You know, how it works with him.
Yeah.
Which I'm still learning, actually, sometimes. And it changes too. So, yeah.
Yeah. And see, I don't know, this is a tough question, but I wonder if you can try to share with us your experience as a father that's unique, because, you know, I can only look from my own perspective, but also a female perspective. And you know, I think fathers are such a unique expression in the world that really makes a difference. And I don't know, what do you mean when you're saying getting to know Sam, or what was your driver there? Like, try and put us in the world of what it's like as a dad.
I think, well, as a dad in general, you know, that you're the male role model for your child, whether that your child is male or female, you're the male role. This is what I'm trying to model to my child. This is how a male functions in the world, you know, in a good way, hopefully. Mm. And so that's what I'm trying to show my child, whether it's Sam or my other two boys, that this is how I'm modeling how to be a grown-up male in the world, and also then learning about how he thinks, how he functions, what his interests and passions are, what his skill sets are, what he needs help with, what he can teach me. I suppose all these things is what I'm saying. I'm trying to get to know Sam and my other boys.
Do you think uniquely bonded you to him? Like, where did you find that common ground of interest?
Sam's a fascinating person.
Yeah.
the way he thinks is and the way he analyzes things and fixes on things and figures them out. I find it quite fascinating, actually.
Yeah.
His brain is, and my wife and I often say this to each other, that you know, Sam is just like, sometimes he really throws you. You just go, wow, okay, you think that way. I think that's what it's, and it's, he's a really interesting guy. I think autistic people in general are often really interesting people because they have a really unique way of thinking, and all of them. So they're out there.
Yeah.
Finding the way that they're out there can be really quite fascinating. And yeah, so it's intriguing.
It sounds like a bond of fascination with his brilliance, like discovering, or like that thing. I love that thing where someone says something and you go, wow, I would never have thought that way.
Yes, 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 totally. And sometimes you'll think, and also other people observing us interact.
Mm-hmm.
Where I will talk, because I'm not kind of know that when someone says something or does something or something happens, and I'm thinking Sam's going to be thinking this. I'll just refer to Sam because I know he'll know something about this because his memory is just phenomenal. So it's almost like Samopedia is the expression we use.
You know, that's Sam, familiar
what
to
were
me.
We doing in August, you know, 2018? You know,
and, yep.
And you go, you'll know it. And,
you know, and you were wearing, and what you said was. Yes.
So, yeah, so, yeah, so he's a fascinating guy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. I love that. I love that. And I guess that's almost a piece of advice, you know, like if you
yes.
if you were going to do anything as a father, get fascinated in your kid.
Yeah, yeah. And I think because I did spend a lot of time with Sam. So one of my goals in being Sam's father was to teach him stuff, right? So one of the ways I did that, which basically required me to have time with him, and you know, being a doctor and I'm working long hours and all that, it was hard to do that. So I purposefully used to go for years. We would go camping all the time together, and the Blue Mountains was our camping place of choice, and we must have gone there 50 plus times, and just, you know, teaching him how to make a fire, cook, do things, when all that stuff you got to do when you can.
Yep.
And so that was one of the ways, and also the Africa trip. That was the whole idea behind the Africa trip, is to get the chance to show him how to do stuff especially when there was challenge and uncertainty about how to problem solve.
That's extraordinary on every level. And I really hope that what people hear, this is not a doctor who's a smart guy. I mean, you are, right? You're a doctor and you're a smart guy.
I got through
but that's
exams.
Not that's not what the source of this is. This is a dad who went, my job is to be a role model. My job is to be fascinated in my kid. I'm going to teach him stuff. I'm going to go camping. And then I'm going to follow my nose with what he loves and the passion.
Yep. So,
and then, oh, okay, it'll make a real difference to him if he has to learn to do that in circumstances that are changing all the time.
Yep.
But following him and your relationship.
Well, I think that's the role of parents.
Yeah.
Right? Parents or carers of a child, whether you're male or female, you're mentoring, you're guiding, you're teaching your child how to grow up. And how all the skills that are required to do that, whether we're talking social skills, practical skills, academic skills, whatever it is. I mean, academic skills are also taught by teachers as well. But the parent is a mentor, a guide for their child. That's what a parent should do. So in some parenting frameworks, that parenting is meant to be someone who controls their child, and I don't like that. It should be you're the teacher. And when I'm talking about parenting stuff with parents in my practice, I say, people talk about discipline, and the word discipline actually comes from disciplina, I think it is in Latin, which means to teach. Okay. So discipline is
like
not,
disciple.
And punishment is punis is harm. Okay. So it's true discipline is teaching, and most of that is positive stuff, not punishment. And so, you know, teaching them how to do the shopping, pay for something, manage money, pack a dishwasher, whatever it is, that you're guiding them. So I think that as a father, you're doing that in the male framework.
Yeah, and look, I think it's I kind of can't wrap my head around going backpacking for 6 months, full stop.
It was a bit nutty.
In Africa. I mean, it sounds amazing, like wonderful. But tell us a little bit about that. Like, what did you discover? Because you ended up writing a book. You could have just gone on the trip, but
well, actually, one of my patients was a publisher, and she heard about it and she said, you should write a book about that. And I thought, well, actually, okay, sure. And so it was the idea behind us doing that was all these principles I was just talking about before extended, that I needed to teach Sam how to function in our world. The best way to do that would be to expose him to challenge and uncertainty where he's got to problem solve and deal with stuff. And so that's why we chose Africa, because it's a place where stuff happens and it's uncertain and you don't know when the bus is going to turn up, or you may not know where you're staying that night, or how to order a meal, or talk to somebody.
Or the food, or the language, or the cultural things.
Everything is different.
Yeah.
And it was.
It was,
in terms of what we wanted, we got uncertainty in spades.
Yeah.
To the point where it was really hard for me. I was coping less as the trip went on, and Sam was coping better.
Right.
So that was, which I didn't expect. It transformed him in terms of how he was able to cope with stuff. And, you know, that.
And yeah. 6 months, like, you could have gone, okay, we're going to do that for a month, but that's a lot.
Well, I'm glad we did do 6 months because if it had been a month, it just would have been traumatic.
Right.
Without getting any gain. The challenge initially was so profound, and I probably threw him a bit too far into the deep end, because it was really hard for him at first. But by the last couple of months, he was going really well with all that.
Yeah, you've said something extraordinary there that I don't even think you realise is extraordinary, and that is that if we'd only been for a month, we would have had trauma with no gain, right? But what you've said that's behind that is the willingness to be there and be there and be there and be there for all of it, knowing that at some point something, what's possible is a shift, right, into a new place or a new realm. And I think most people would really struggle in even a few minutes of discomfort or trauma. And maybe some of that is just not knowing how to be there as that's happening. So maybe tell us something about what got you through, like, what does it take to be there when someone is experiencing real upset or trauma?
Oh, it's hard.
Yeah.
It is hard. And it's, and I'm not just about Africa thing, but in general, you know, when Sam was really struggling when he was younger, dealing with some change in his life or something that he didn't expect was going to happen and happens, and he was distressed by it.
Mm.
So you're trying to guide them through that and say, look, it's okay. We can let's try and because often the temptation is, okay, we'll just keep him in his safe place.
Mm-hmm.
Watching the Wiggles, wearing his favorite clothes.
Eating the same food,
all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So he's happy and he's comfortable. But if we do that and we give into that aspect of sameness, he doesn't progress. And so I think that was, but if you progressing sometimes can be hard for your autistic child.
Mm.
And so you're trying to do that in a gentle way. The loving push, I think, is what's her name, the famous lady who wrote all those books.
Oh, Brené Brown?
The animal husbandry expert, autistic woman. Anyway, she calls it the loving push, because in that you're trying to push them along and get them to experience life in a broad way and learn stuff and develop capabilities.
Yeah.
But not in a distressing way.
Yeah, you've made me think of something that's a vivid memory for me with one of my children where we were trying to do something that, you know, there was change, there was uncertainty. And they were in the middle of lots of emotional experience, heightened emotional experience and heightened body sensations and distressed and, you know, all of that. And my instant reaction was to want to shut it down and make it better or give them space and put them aside to stop it. And I vividly remember my child looking at me going, I'm really upset and I'm okay. and it was just so okay. Yeah, my job is to know that you are capable and to know that you can find that spot for yourself in partnership with me where it's okay to be upset and you can be upset and okay at the same time.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
This all comes back to, you know, in terms of how children learn into, you know, we get to quite a bit of theory. You know, Vygotsky was the guy that developed a theory about the zone of proximal development, which means the bit of life you're going to learn next. And if it's in the right zone, you can learn it without getting distressed. But if it's too far a leap, it can be distressing. And so trying to find that right area where you can learn. And so as a father, trying to help your child grow and learn, grow as a person and learn, but without distressing them, is trying to, the sweet spot you're trying to hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that takes such a willingness to go through that and discover that, you know, and that's what I love about what you said. You would have had to go through lots of different spaces in that first month till you found this sweet spot, you know, whatever that was for then, because it obviously changes.
But yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's amazing. So I have so many questions for you. But you know, one of the things I know that parents deal with, and I imagine this could be prevalent for fathers, is when their children is either diagnosed or going through something that is a struggle, that they start to blame themselves.
Yeah.
And often will even isolate themselves from other families or people in their lives. So can you say a little bit about that?
Okay. What I would say, if I had someone who was thinking that way, is first of all, why should you blame yourself for something that's not bad? Okay. Autism is different, right? It's a different way of thinking. It's a different way of behaving, I suppose, in terms of it has strengths and it has areas that offer challenge.
Like all people.
Yes. The autism spectrum is part of the human spectrum.
Like all people.
Yeah, so they shouldn't be blaming anybody, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so don't blame yourself, right? And this is the way, you know, 1% to 2% of the population are born, right? And we need these people, as another quote from that same woman whose name I can't
Temple
remember.
Grandin.
Temple Grandin. I think it's her that said, if we didn't have autistic people, we'd just have a whole lot of human beings sitting around socializing all day, not getting anything done. So which is true. So, you know, autistic people are really important. You know, they contribute to society immensely. Yeah. So we need them, and so don't blame yourself first of all, but understand the strengths as well.
Yeah,
as the deficit, but once again, doesn't change your role as a parent is exactly the same as it always is, which is to mentor your child and help them grow as a person.
Mm.
So that's the dad's role. That's the mum's role too, in a male and female way. So yeah.
And then I think the other part of it is finding other, like the even if the instinct is to isolate, that it makes such a difference to connect with other families. Absolutely. And I would imagine particularly father to father.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Because, yeah. You know, we all have these little isolated, you know, nuclear families supposedly, and I think that's not really the way human beings should live. You know, we are meant to be living in a village with a couple of hundred people, and that's the way you should live, and so you should get out there and with your child and be interacting with other children, other adults, out and about, okay, if there's some behavior issues that can make it, that may be socially unacceptable, well, that's other people's problem, you know?
I think that's one of the early breakthroughs you have as a parent in general, but particularly, you know, I know as a parent of autistic kids where they do have behaviors that aren't like quote unquote normal or typical behaviors. And the first breakthrough you have is when you stop apologizing for that. You know, and you really actually go, my kid's great, deal with it,
yes,
you know?
Yes, 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 yeah, exactly. And I think including schools, because, you know, schools are actually quite an unnatural environment for a child to be in. I mean, we have them so that they can academically learn and all the rest of it, but that's the way our society's structured. But for 30 kids to sit in front of an adult from the age of five, sit in a room for 6 hours or more a day, in front of an adult who's talking to them, and you know that doesn't fit with some people, you know, so yeah, if it was back in the village prehistory, you know that
It wouldn't have mattered. Like that.
You know, So I think that getting out and about, don't isolate.
Yeah.
Take them to the library. Take them to the shops. Take them to wherever you're going, as you would anyone else.
Yeah. Now, you already said it earlier, but you looked at it from a particular perspective, which is, and it's true, commonly, you know, the father may be the person working and the mother may be the one that takes them to appointments. But I think even if that's not the case, the medical system does focus on mums.
Yes.
On the whole, whether we like it or not. So what do you think, what's the actual impact? I think there's probably two major ones, three. What do you think is the impact on the father and then maybe even the child and the mother, or I'm going to say mother, it could be just partner, other parent.
Yep.
What do you think is the impact of that when the focus is on one person or the mum?
I think, first of all, it can cause tension in relationships. If one parent, and as you say, it is often the mother, but certainly not always, if one parent or carer is solely the focus on what's happening with this kid medically and or even more broadly, that can be a strain on the other parent if it is another parent. And that they're thinking, well, I've just been sidelined, you know, I've been isolated, I've been cut out to a certain extent. And I think that that's not great. So I think that we should be getting, if there are two parents, that they both should be involved where possible, as much as possible. Yeah. So, and of course, you know, there are employment aspects and finance aspects and all the rest of it. We can talk about single parents. We can talk about same-sex parents, all these other grandparents. Certainly where I work in Nowra, where there's a lot of family disruption, there's a lot, unfortunately, in that where I work is a lot of domestic violence issues and drug and alcohol issues and that sort of stuff where you can have all sorts of combinations of who's in the house. But I think if there is more than one parent that they should be involved, or carer, they should be involved with in that child's growing up.
Yeah. Look, my fantasy is we start talking about them as core units, and that everybody's got a core unit of people around them, and that they are a real mixed bag of people a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And you know, I guess from our own personal experiences, what we know is the more the core unit around a human being is on the same page and empowering something, the bigger the difference that gets made. Yeah.
So that whole nuclear family model, even in our society, is often not the standard one. And that really that co-parenting sort of thing and not including with other families. So when you asked me before about getting out and seeing other people, I think that's absolutely critical.
So critical.
Yeah,
because, you know, the next couple of things I wanted to ask you about, which are specific, you know, you're a father, so I've got to ask you from that perspective, you know, are about either the father's mental health if they're, you know, isolating themselves, or maybe even one of the other things they might have to work through is a very different viewpoint of how things should go or how parenting should be done.
Yes.
So why don't you say a little bit about that, or how fathers could work their way through that?
Yeah, so two things. First of all, talked about the father themselves in terms of mental health and all the other stuff. And then you also then talking about that parenting thing.
Yeah.
You know, should parenting actually be a verb? But anyway, often people don't understand what their views on parenting are until they become parent.
Yeah.
Or their partner.
Yeah.
You know, and in particular things like discipline and, you know.
Or the simple, the pocket money, what they should be fed, what they should not be
chores,
fed. Bedtime. yes. Homework, school.
Talking like, back to your parent.
Very good.
Swearing.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. So,
when do you talk about puberty, sex, you know,
yes,
like
exactly.
All of it.
Yes, when you're allowed to go on a date, you know.
Yeah.
You know, all the getting home, you know, by a certain time, all these things. in terms of what you as a parent think about. And often that's baggage from our own childhood, you know, you inherit it. And how that interacts when you've got two parents that maybe don't know what the other parent's attitudes to these things are.
Until it's right there.
Yeah, and you can also get cultural overlays of on course. This as well. And so if you throw in someone who's neurodivergent into the equation, who behaves and thinks a bit differently, that can stress test these parenting roles. Mm-hmm. So I think communicating is really good at this point.
So, you could have stopped good. It's good, yeah.
Yeah, and having a bit of a think about what your attitudes are and what your partner's attitudes are, and maybe even getting some bit of advice on that, if you need to.
Yeah, and being able to step back and look at it. One of the things my husband – this is going to sound crazy, but one of the things my husband and I did early on is – when we've got three kids and everybody's got all different needs and our own needs in our household is we love playing Yahtzee, okay? We love Yahtzee, the game. And what I love about Yahtzee for me is the almost no thought about it. I roll some dice and
never played Yahtzee.
I write some numbers down, right? And so it requires almost no thinking. But you got to do it with someone else. So there is that interaction and play. And why we started that ritual is because it was a forced sit down and talk to each other and communicate part of our relationship. And the kids then knew mum and dad are playing Yahtzee. And so now they're going to be talking. And those were those moments where we could for a second step back and go, hang on a sec, have we got really different views about this or what's going on or I feel really stressed out or any of that kind of communication? But we weren't doing it without something in place to sort of give us that time and space to do it.
Yeah, so you are expanding your child's world by introducing Yahtzee but also learning from each other about what your how you should behave when you're doing this Yahtzee game. You're learning about each other and your child as well. So it's this dynamic that's going on because it's something different. It's something they haven't done before. So you're expanding their world.
So let's go back now because I think a lot of fathers may not have the opportunity to be have the level of knowledge you have or may have not had people modelling for them things like self-reflection and communication and, you know, all of those things that you're talking about.
Things that blokes apparently are not real good at.
Apparently. Yeah, and you are talking about them fairly easily and that's not necessarily the case if you haven't had that modelled for you, right? So if someone is like, I don't even, that's not my world, that's not how I deal with life and I'm struggling, I don't know how to connect with my kid. Have you got anything that you would say is like simple practical advice that they could start with?
Well, I think that's a really good point you raise there. Do the things that blokes do or you do, do that with your kid. Okay? So if you like, down my way, you know, guys will often be into rugby league and fishing and maybe surfing. and so do that with your kid. That's what you do. That's where you're modeling what is done. Working on the farm, all this sort of stuff that my patients do with their, this is what the fathers should be doing with their sons and daughters. And whether they've got autism or not. And actually if they've got autism, it's probably more important. So because, you know, that autism tendency to want to have sameness, then they won't be wanting to go fishing or whatever or get in a boat. Or, you know, on that sort of thing. So do what you do and do it with your kid.
Yeah, including the stuff as you were talking, I was just thinking whatever else you do at home as well, like
working in the shed.
Whatever you're doing, taking the rubbish out, helping cooking dinner.
You've got an interest in cars.
Yeah.
Share that interest with your son or daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think all human beings just want to connect with their parents, right?
Like, totally.
So I think we often make it really complicated and – actually, it's probably pretty simple.
Connect.
Yeah.
So just because, you know, you do those things and it's a bit harder because, say, for example, fishing And the whole idea of a slippery, slimy fish coming out of the water and then gutting it and all that is sensory challenging for the autistic child.
Mm.
Get them used to it, you know, and you know, just put nudge away and you know, get them, you know, maybe a bit slowly so it's not too traumatic for them. But you know, ease them into that sort of experience.
Yeah, and there's even that thing of being able to go, I love this feeling. Oh, look, you don't like it. I love it. Like all of that kind of sharing.
Yeah. So that's yes. So you know that I think if I can say a message to the fathers out there, that do stuff with your kid. Mm. Yeah, and do what you get to choose what stuff, but do stuff, and connect with them and. Mentor them, and so that's what the fathers should be doing. And do not think of this autism situation as something that doesn't mean you can progress in life. Yeah.
Well, I don't think you can say it better than what you just said, it, James. So I think you know, we could talk for hours, but I'm going to leave it there. Okay. And I know your children are so lucky to have you, and so are your patients, really, and other GPs. And I know many people would probably thank you for your wisdom and experience, but I want to thank you for your heart.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
And I really appreciate you being on the podcast today.
My pleasure, Madeline. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to A Different Brilliant. An Aspect podcast focusing on the strengths, interests, and aspirations of the autistic community. If you would like to learn more, visit our website, aspect.org.au, to listen to past episodes or send us a message. Make sure to like or subscribe to A Different Brilliant on your podcast app.